I'd like to see a show of hands on how many of you own time machines. It's more than I thought. So, if you drove your time machine to church today, thank you for coming to today. It's probably better that none of the rest of you admit to having a time machine, because we know the kids will want to borrow it. We've seen Back to the Future. And so, little pitchers have big ears, so mum's the word. I have always loved the idea of time machines. Science fiction has used them for ages, and if you combine a time machine with a spaceship, that is even more amazing. You can then go both anywhere and anywhen. So two of my favorite time machine spacecrafts are Doctor Who's TARDIS, which, because its chameleon circuit is broken, looks like an ordinary 1960s-style London police call box. And the spaceship called the Heart of Gold from Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which, not to bog us down in the science of time travel too much, is fitted with an infinite improbability drive, which is way cooler than the Star Wars with their ion drives and hyperjumps and Star Trek with its warp speed. I'm just saying. Without a time machine, we consider the past immutable. Whatever has already happened cannot be changed. But the idea of time travel opens the question, what if I could change the past? What would I change? What could I change? And what would happen to the universe if the past could be changed? Movies like Back to the Future, The Terminator, and 12 Monkeys all play with this theme. Some people have proposed that all possible variations of the universe exist at once, that every choice option that could be made in fact happens or is happening. Do all possible worlds exist? Perhaps. And could we travel to them? Perhaps. But that's not what we're going to talk about. Even though that's not what we're going to talk about, I want you to hold that thought. So some of you at this point are no doubt looking at your order of service and saying, it says here that the sermon is called Trust Me by Reverend Tony Larson, and I'm not sure how time machines and the existence of all possible worlds fit into that. And some of you may have previously gone to the LCUUC website and seen today's sermon listed as Groundhog Day coming round again and again and again by Reverend Amy Shaw. I'm sure that somewhere in the infinite possible variations of this day, Reverend Amy Shaw is giving her Groundhog Day sermon. In another, I am presenting the sermon called Trust Me by Reverend Tony Larson. And in another, Salvador Dali and the Dalai Lama are riding unicycles and teaching us about topiary. In the imagination, there is an astounding number of possibilities. For instance, back on Tuesday, when today was the future, and I had just learned that I would be taking care of this service, I thought I might give a sermon on being prepared. That is what I wished I was right then. And it seems we ought to be, and since we certainly know that things change and the world turns and time waits for no man and so forth. However, in the version of today, the one that is happening right now to you, I am not presenting Trust Me. Instead, I am asking you to trust me and letting you know that we are going to be talking about Groundhog Day, both the day and the movie. And I think I will title this talk, How Oracular Rodents and a Movie Might Make You a Better Person. So trust me, everything we have said is already related to Groundhog Day. Now hold that thought. I'm going to save you a lot of reading with a single quote, just a huge amount of reading. In 1905 through 1906, the philosopher, essayist, poet, and novelist George Santayana published a 5-volume book called The Life of Reason. In volume 1, Reason and Common Sense, he wrote, quote, "Progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness. When change is absolute, there remains no being to improve, and no direction is set for possible improvement. And when experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual." those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Although we may not remember who said it? Santa Ana. Most of us know that that last line, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Some variation on that. For our purposes, I want to highlight the following. First, memory is important. Without it, we cannot make judgments and choices that will lead us toward a future goal. Without it, we're not time machines. We only live in now. Second, progress is not simply change, but directional change, the ability to steer toward a specific future. Third, our concept of progress assumes that we can influence change, that the future is mutable, and not a fixed outcome from previous causes dominoing on through the universe, that we can make choices. Fourth, Santa Ana is somewhat off-mark in his statement, quote, when experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual. Let's just drop that, as among savages, as even well-adjusted, well-educated, middle-class suburbanites, marketers, insurance salesmen, computer administrators, engineers, hippies, bankers, CEOs, farmers, hairdressers, teachers, and politicians, etc., can and do fail to retain experience. Santa Ana is chiding us with this phrase, among savages. He's not giving us a way to say, oh, since we're not savages, this doesn't apply to us. And lastly, I would drop the words, are condemned, and simply say that those who cannot remember the past repeat it. Only an outside viewer with both a historical memory and a critical opinion of that memory might be led to say that repetition of the events is a kind of punishment. I would not say that all of those stuck in a cyclic set of events, a repeated history, would feel condemned. They might feel quite comfortable instead. In fact, even with memory and recognition that they are caught in a cycle, they might still feel comfortable. For example, it's Sunday again. You're here again. Are you unhappy with that cycle? Are the seats uncomfortable? Now hold that thought. Flipping back to time machines, I want to say these two things. Each of us is a time machine. Memory and our ability to reason and set goals based on memory is the engine for our time machine. So let me expand on that. We move in time, granted, only in one direction toward the future, but as Santa Ana indicates, we have a capacity for remembering the past, and this capacity allows us to drive ourselves toward a specific future. Although we cannot change the events of the past, we can form our own opinion and goals for the future based on the patterns we have experienced. Okay, you say, I get it, we're time machines. But being single-directional, aimed at the future, we can't go back in time and change things. We can't jump back to, say, Sunday, June 28th, 1914, in Sarajevo, and keep Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie from being assassinated by the Black Hand, and thus, in theory, keep World War I from occurring. We can't jump back to Vienna in 1907 and support a young Adolf Hitler in becoming a painter, and thus avert World War II. And so forth. So it seems that in comparison to time machines like the TARDIS and the Heart of Gold, being a kind of time machine ourselves is, well, kind of lame. And I agree, our imagined time machines do seem way cooler. This is because the imagination has an unlimited special effects budget. But add these two additional pieces of information. One, you really exist. The imagined time machine does not. Working with a real time machine yourself has real effects. And two, we don't know what the shape of time is. We commonly think of it in linear terms, the past behind us, single point of now, and the future in front of us. But we also commonly see time as cyclical. And if time is cyclical, then our past is not only behind us, but in front of us, and thus mutable, able to be changed. Hold that thought. Now stop me if you've heard this one before. Three people arrive at the gates of heaven: a Wiccan, a Unitarian, and a Wisconsin Northwoods hermit. Now, as always seems to be the case in this type of joke, St. Peter stops them at the pearly gates and tells them they can enter only if they can answer this question: what is Easter? Now, stay with me here, trust me. This is a sermon about Groundhog Day. So the Wiccan steps forward. That's easy. Easter is the holiday in November where everybody gets together, they eat turkey, and they're thankful. No, says St. Peter, I'm afraid that's Thanksgiving. You cannot enter. He turns to the Unitarian and asks the same question: what is Easter? Unitarian takes a few moments to think. There were some RE classes on this back in the day. And he finally says, Easter is the holiday in December when we bring a tree inside and we exchange presents and we celebrate the birth of Jesus. No, says Peter, that is incorrect. Is it the birth of Martin Luther King or Gandhi then? Asks the Unitarian. No, says Peter, and you only get one chance to answer the question. He turns to the Wisconsin hermit from the Great Northwoods and asks, do you know what Easter is? Oh, yeah, there, hey, don't you know, says the certain hermit. I know what Easter is. It's the Christian holiday that ties with the Jewish celebration of the Passover. Jesus and his disciples, they were eating the Last Supper, and one of the disciples, he betrays Jesus to the Romans, who hang him on a cross where he dies. He is taken down and he is buried in a nearby cave, which is sealed with a big rock. St. Peter smiles with great delight. The hermit continues, every year at Easter, the rock is rolled aside, and Jesus comes out. And if he sees his shadow, there will be 6 more weeks of winter. You don't have to hold on to that thought. Groundhog Day, the day, according to the all-knowing internet, Wikipedia, and other sites, is a celebration which began as a Pennsylvania German custom in southeastern and central Pennsylvania in the 18th and 19th centuries. It has its origins in European weather lore, where a badger, or a sacred bear, acts as the prognosticator of the future weather and the turning of the seasons. It has similarities to the pagan festival, and forgive me, I will no doubt butcher this word, Imolc, which is what is known as one of the cross-quarter days of the neo-pagan Celtic calendar year. So let me explain that. If you picture the year as a circle, and you divide that circle into 4 equal parts with one vertical line running from top to bottom and the other one from left and right so that both lines meet in the center, at this point you have a circle with a cross in it. At the top, 12 o'clock, is the Yule, which corresponds with the winter solstice, variously December 20th through the 23rd. And at the 3 o'clock precision is Ostara, the vernal equinox, variously March 19th through the 22nd. And at 6 o'clock on this is midsummer, the summer solstice, June 19th through the 23rd. And at 9 o'clock, the autumnal equinox. So those are the phases of the sun. If you then draw 2 more lines bisecting the circle in an X, you get 4 new points created on the circle, and these are known as the cross-quarter days. So I made a little drawing for those who can't visualize and have exceptionally good eyesight. So circle, cross, cross-quarter. So here's the Yule, here's Ostara, and here we are today, Groundhog Day, or Imolc. Halfway between the Yule and the start of spring. So there's Groundhog Day, February 2nd, halfway between the Yule and Ostara, or to use the Christian references, halfway between Christmas and Easter. Now, depending on where you live in the world and the weather patterns of the year, you might want to make an argument that spring, which has symbolically been thought as the birth of the year, and which we currently define as the quarter of the year between the vernal equinox and the summer solstice, really makes more sense to you as being the time between Groundhog Day and May Day. Your nearby neighbors may politely disagree, But you and your neighbor, instead of simply agreeing to disagree about when spring starts, may pose the question to your local oracle. In this case, a divinely inspired rodent, the groundhog. So I have an example of the groundhog there on the altar. He doesn't always wear the hat. The groundhog will then predict, through divine inspiration, when spring starts by coming out on Groundhog Day and either seeing his shadow or not. If there's a shadow, spring won't start until the vernal equinox. Problem solved. Groundhog Day, as we all know, is a wildly popular holiday, right up there with Festivus, Towel Day, and the Pastafarian International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Okay, that last statement was entirely ironic. Groundhog Day is a fairly well-known, but not very celebrated day. That is, not as many people celebrate it as, say, the Super Bowl or Christmas. However, the town of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, is celebrating their 128th year of Groundhog Day today. And for those of you who don't have time to do the math, they've been celebrating since 1887. And the name of their oracular groundhog in Punxsutawney is Phil. He is said, by outside sources, to have 39% accuracy in his weather predictions. Now, hold that thought while we take a brief moment to talk about the shape of time. As already mentioned, we often think of time linearly. The past, now, the future, all on a line. However, the line of the year is commonly a circle. For simplicity's sake, a circle of seasons. Spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall, winter, turn, seasons. We understand the wheel of time. We have a symbol up here. Oh, the wheel. So, now I have to find my place. Encapsulated within a year are further circles of time. For instance, a month is to some extent related to a lunar cycle, so it is the birth and death of the moon. A cycle of birth, death. The moon waxes, the moon wanes. And a week is a 7-day cycle that links in some way back to the creation of the world from the book of Genesis. God takes 6 days to make everything, and on the 7th day he rests. So you can think of every week as a cycle of creation. A day itself is broken into light and dark, hours, minutes, and seconds, with each day repeating the cycle of the hours. A day itself can be a birth-death cycle. We are born each morning, die each night, to be born again the next morning. What this tells us, if nothing else, is that we are culturally drawn to patterns and to symbols, that human beings look for patterns and use them to make sense of the world. We celebrate anniversaries, our birthdays every year, the beginning of a new year, wedding anniversaries. We and the year and our relationships are born again and again. We are comfortable with repetition, with a certain level of sameness. We build cycles. When Santayana talks about the repetition of history, he is talking about how we interpret history itself into cycles. Cycles of war, cycles of building knowledge, such as the ages of man, the Stone Age, the Age of Reason, the Mechanical Age, and so forth. Now hold that thought as we look at the movie Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day, the movie, was released in 1993. The movie is set in a fictional version of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, which was created in the actual town of Woodstock, Illinois, just 65.8 miles away from Heartland. For those of you who have not seen the movie or don't clearly remember it, here's a synopsis. An egocentric TV meteorologist named Phil Connors, his news producer Rita, and cameraman Larry are sent from a Pittsburgh television station to Punxsutawney to cover the annual Groundhog Day festivities. Phil, who is tired of this assignment because he's done it before, gives a lackluster report. Due to a blizzard, which Phil had predicted would miss the town, he and the crew are forced to stay in Punxsutawney overnight. When Phil wakes up the next morning, he discovers that it is Groundhog Day again, as the day unfolds the same way it had before. Although he is aware of the repetition of the day, everyone else is reliving Groundhog Day as if it is their first time. Phil is able to remember each repetition of the day while no one else is. In short, Phil is caught in a single-day time loop in which only he has a historical memory of the repetition. He is stuck. Let's pause for a moment there. If you were caught in a time loop, what would you do? Perhaps we should remove the if from that. As each of us lives our lives, we find ourselves settling into particular patterns of behavior. After all, we have a strong comfort factor with cyclical time. If we don't like a cycle we have fallen into, a rut, the same old, how do we get out of it? Or to ask it another way, how do we get reborn? Or to ask it yet another way, how do we activate the engine of the time machine that each of us is and forward ourselves to another day? The movie Groundhog Day is quite clever and funny in its presentation. Within the frame of the movie, we get to be Phil and see a situation, experience it with him, try to solve the mystery. Since Phil is the only person in the repetition of Groundhog Day who has memory of each repetition, he is the only person who can introduce new action. That is, if he behaves differently, he can cause the others around him to behave differently. He can cause ripples of new behaviors. Initially, after getting over the strangeness of the phenomena, Phil takes advantage of the days to build information about the world he is stuck in. He does this the way one would explore a computer world. He gathers information about the people, and then he plays that world like a computer game in which there are no long-term consequences to himself, because regardless of what happens, he will wake up the next morning and start the day over. He comes to see himself as a god. We find him seducing beautiful women, stealing money, smoking and eating excessively, experiencing a police chase, kidnapping Puxatawny Phil. As the initial thrill of this behavior wears off, he goes to the extremes of killing himself in different ways. But each day, he just wakes up again. The one thing that he tries to do and is always unsuccessful in is to seduce Rita. For those of you who are fascinated by fairy tales and riddles, the movie portrays a man under a spell or curse. But like all spells and curses, we believe there is a solution to it, whether it be a kiss from a prince or a touch from a magic feather. The movie leads us to ask how Phil can save himself. What change does he have to make to win Rita and escape the loop of time? Something like Santayana's statement, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it," is at play here. But Phil can remember the past. So what is it that he is missing? Part of the fascination people have for this film is the sense in which Phil has a spiritual problem, not a physical one. He is trapped by his own behavior, and the universe is demanding he behave differently, or he will remain stuck on a single day. To me, the core of Phil's issue at bottom is his egocentricity. Everything he does is to get something for himself, not to give something. He treats the people in the place he is in as objects. He lacks what Martin Buber calls an I-thou relationship with anyone and anything. He is, in the terms of existential philosophers, inauthentic. It is not until Phil quits trying to manipulate Rita into falling for him and instead opens himself up to her and asks her what she wants that he begins to think about things differently. When Rita lists the things she wants in a man, humbleness, intelligence, kindness, gentleness, he comes to realize that he must approach the world not as a manipulator for his own pleasure, but as a benefactor. Most of what Rita wants is not something he can produce himself, but something other people have to see in him. As with the earlier sequences and variations on misbehavior, even in this circumscribed world that repeats a single day, Phil is able to apply his knowledge to become a benefactor to various individuals, to the town itself, and to educate himself. Phil performs heroic services. For example, he performs the Heimlich maneuver on a choking man. He saves a boy who falls from a tree. And although he is unable to keep an elderly homeless man from dying, He tries repeatedly, and we can assume, in some way, he learns that there are things beyond his control, which he simply must come to accept. Using his single day, over and over again, Phil learns to play jazz piano, speak French, sculpt ice, memorize the life story of almost everybody in the town, and in that effort, he comes to like the people and the town, and they come to like him. This, to me, is the key event. Whereas Santa Yannick speaks of being condemned to repeat events, Phil is able to repeat events and like them. In 1942, Albert Camus published an essay called The Myth of Sisyphus. From Greek mythology, Sisyphus is a man who is condemned to roll a rock up a hill, only to have it roll down again, thus requiring him to repeat the task endlessly. Camus compared the absurdity of this activity to what he saw as the absurdity of our own lives, our endless work and repetition. But Camus proposed a solution that depends finally only on us. Suppose that the struggle of repeating an endless task is enough to fill our hearts. Suppose that Sisyphus, in an eternity of repetitions, is happy. I think the movie Groundhog Day, like the day itself, bears repeating. So take some time to go out again, and maybe again, and again, and see what it says to you. Start a dialogue with it, and see where it goes.